Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora. Always Lynn talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 132. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation. Dave, we're recording this here late on Thursday night, and it has been a busy Thursday. We were just talking before we began recording. Kind of feels like a game day. This has been an extremely busy offseason, a very good offseason. But it has been nonstop action, nonstop news, and Thursday was no exception.
Man, well, aren't we supposed to get a little break in between rookie mini camps and OTAs? And Lord have mercy, yeah, we were talking. I can't remember an off season like this one. I don't know if it's just because there's more, you know, you have more access to more stuff coming in and all that kind of stuff. But it seems like it's just been one thing after the other, and the Steelers have helped provide some of that with, moves throughout the off season. And boy, do we got one to talk about today, and several interviews, and somebody falling in a pool, and it has been a crazy Thursday. So, dealer's choice, Alex. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think we know where we're going to start with the news of the day. Do want to mention briefly a bit later in the show, we'll have a roundtable, kind of part draft, part 2023 outlook with Jonathan Heitritter, Josh Carney, and Tyler Wise. So we'll get their input on the draft and some of the news of the day a little bit later in the show. But yeah, TJ Watt fell into a pool of water. Mitch Trubisky falling into a pool of money. A reported extension, news broken by Omar Khan himself on an episode, an interview with Pat McAfee on the Pat McAfee show. And so Ian Rappaport saying it's a 2-year extension. We know a chunk of the details, some of the broader financials, but Mitch Trubisky contract extension. So I'm eating a lot of crow this week. Don't ask me about my opinion on quarterback stuff, because I got Rudolph wrong. I got Trubisky largely wrong. And so I thought he would play out this deal. You had talked about extension, Khan's comments back in February at the combine. And now Trubisky seems imminent to an extension with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, obviously not officially announced by the team. I would suspect maybe that's going to happen tomorrow or Monday or something along those lines there. But it sounds like it's a done deal at this point. Omar Khan breaking extension news during an interview. Do you ever remember Kevin Colbert doing that? I can't.
Well, him doing interviews was light at the start. Yeah, I mean, how far has Omar Khan come from that first combine interview? A very nervous, kind of very close to the vest Omar Khan. And now he's just saying, yeah, here's who we're signing, you know, next. It's just it's been a big turnaround for Omar Khan.
Yeah, good on Pat McAfee for getting that out there. You know,
you can get these guys talking a little
bit. Yeah, good on him, and good on Rich Eisen too. Everybody sees Mike Tomlin was on with Rich Eisen earlier on this Thursday. Another great interview. I think something like 18, 19, 20 minutes, something like that there. But Mitch Trubisky, weren't we just talking about him in the last podcast, Alex, and saying go back to the truth serum and, you know, Omar Khan and all the way back to the combine, how much is that lip service? And, you know, he seemed to talk at the time that they wanted Mitch Trubisky passed this year. And I think right there at the end of February is when I wrote that article, could we see actually a Mitch Trubisky extension this offseason? And I even went as far as to put a projection out there in that end of February post. And fast forward, here we are in the middle of May. 2-year extension for Trubisky, according to Ian Rappaport. It's got a, it sounds like it's got a base value of the three total years of $19.4 million. And he can earn, it looks like, a total of $33 million over the length of the contract. So obviously there's extensions. I mean, incentives and a bunch of variables in there as well too. So those didn't go away. It'd be interesting to see what the playtime variables, if they've changed from what they were in his last contract. Now you look at this $19.4 million over the 3 years, you have to keep in mind that he was due $8 million this year. So that's considered old money. You subtract that from the $19.4 million total. You come up with, what, $11.4 million new money. You take the $11.4 and you divide that by two. That's 5.7 million. That's his new money average based on this. And his old new money average, that's weird to say, was, you know, slightly over seven at that point. But it, you know, we don't have all, you know, we've just got the loose kind of value on this thing, but I don't think it's hard to start piecing it together here. And the way I kind of envision this, now this is, you know, I'm at the mercy at the number that's out there. So I have to, all I'm working off of is a $19.4 million total value of the 3 years. If indeed that's the case, I envision this having like an $8.1 million signing bonus, which was, you know, a little bit more than what he was scheduled to earn in a base salary, and a total of like $9.4 million in 2023, base salaries in 2024 and 2025 of $5 million each. And if indeed it's what I think it is, it should lower his cap number, Alex, by $4 million or thereabouts, so maybe a little less than that.
So that's a lot of cap space that's getting cleared this week with Akella Witherspoon's release, and then this extension with Trubisky that should provide some sort of 2023 cap relief. So, given just what we know, and I know we don't know all the details in terms of the particulars of the contract, just again some of these baseline figures, I think in terms of the new money average at 5.7 per year over the next, you know, the 2 new years, that is a good price to pay for, I think, a veteran backup quarterback, one of the better number twos in football. And rather than trying to go find somebody next year for maybe slightly cheaper, you know, the effort, the risk, the unknown in doing that, it's just not worth it. So to me, you know, it's a fair number for both sides. And again, I'm surprised by it, but I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, look, you keep someone, another experienced quarterback in the building past 2023, and now, you know, it looks like your quarterback room is set, at least with the top two, you know, for the next couple of years. Now, I wouldn't think that anything more than the first year's fully guaranteed on this, meaning the $9.4 million, we'll see. But, you know, assuming Mitch doesn't fall off the cliff, you know, look, we hope we don't have to see him, right? We hope that we see him do a couple of kneel downs, several kneel downs, maybe in relief here. But assuming like he has base salaries in 2024 and 2025 of $5 million. And cap hits of around $7.7 million, you can certainly work around that, especially he's still several years away from Kenny, you know, potentially getting a new deal there. And, you know, once again, you get it, you know, you keep the devil that you know there. So, look, I've come a long way. You know, we went into the offseason wondering maybe if Mitch Trubisky might be on the outs, you know, because of that salary. And then you get to the Art Rooney II comments and you start saying, well, it sounds like they're going to keep them. And then you get to the combine and everything that Omar Khan said, you know, basically not only do we want to keep them, we want to have them here past this season. And Now you fast forward to the middle of May before even OTAs get underway, and you've got him locked up for 2 more years and in the process going to lower that cap charge in 2023 as well, too. So kudos to Omar Khan. Omar's coming.
He's coming. He's here. My thought with Trubisky was, again, in the offseason, I didn't know what real incentive there was for him to want to do an extension. I could see it from Pittsburgh's perspective to make him a number two, to keep him in that role, to provide some clarity about the quarterback room going forward. And, you know, we're still not that far removed from that comment that Trubisky made to ESPN, basically saying he regretted signing as quickly as he did with the Pittsburgh Steelers, basically a deal that was done before free agency. And I believe the first free agency contract announced when the league year began in 2022. So from Trubisky's standpoint, what do you think has changed over these last couple of months for him to go from that comment to, hey, let me, you know, put myself on a long-term deal, at least a 2-year deal extension with the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Yeah, just look, all he had to do is probably had a conversation with Mason Rudolph. Mason probably says it's hell out there.
And the grass is not always greener.
You know, now look, there are a couple of, we've seen a couple of these kind of middle of the road contracts out there this off season, right? You know, kind of medium range, but you know, it's pretty much feast or famine, you know, it seems. And I think at this point, in his career, he's a backup, obviously, and has to accept that. And you know, why not do it in Pittsburgh and do it in a place that, you know, you might have a chance at getting a couple of snaps along the way for whatever reason there. And you know, it prevents him from having to climb into the free agency pool a year from now with all these. How many new quarterbacks did you have come into the league in the first round this year? And how many are coming next year? And, you know, you just get into that spot where, you know, it's time to accept the fact that you're probably a backup. So you better latch on where you can and as good a money as you can. And right now, you know, I think he's one of, you know, the top paid backups in the league. And I think obviously because of the rookie deals around the league, you know, he should be in the top 32 still as far as new money average goes, you know, across the league.
I'm with you. And that's a subject to my terrible take on Friday, basically coming to that same conclusion that I think Trubisky had a probably hard but honest and healthy conversation with himself of saying, my starter days are probably over, at least in the sense of, had I not taken the extension, played out the year as Kenny Pickett's backup, played a little bit, got a game or two when Pickett went down or some mop-up duty, whatever the case is, there was not going to be a hot market for me in all likelihood for the 2024 offseason. And so take the money now instead of trying to bet on yourself and hope something really breaks favorably in your direction. I think Trubisky made that calculation that I can have a really good spot in a place where you can win, compete. I think he does at least, you know, like the locker room, like the culture, all those kinds of things he didn't have in Chicago, things he had more of in Buffalo and wanted to kind of keep that, obviously at more money than what he had in the 1 year with the Bills. And so I think that's the thought that Trubisky has is, let me accept my role as a backup. I can still have value. I'm still one snap away from playing and I can make a fair amount of money while doing all those things.
And look, you know, the Steelers have a long history of being dedicated to some long-term backups on top of it. So, I mean, this thing could, you know, we'll see how long this runs. I mean, he's obviously under contract now through 2025, but you know, might turn into some veteran benefit contracts, but you know, he might be able to play a couple of years past that as well.
Yeah, and frankly,
and why wouldn't you want to play for? I mean, you know, Mike Tomlin on top of it, you know.
Sure. And frankly, it's just there's probably some value in him and somebody wanting to keep him around. You know, he was a 1 year starter at North Carolina, really didn't get a whole lot of commitment there, had a very turbulent Chicago, you know, career, mostly downs, but some ups, and never really was on stable, consistent, probably secure feeling. Obviously, Buffalo was a 1 year thing. I'm sure he was well liked, had a good time there, but we knew that was going to be a short term play. And so for somebody to come to him and say, hey, we like you, Mitch, we want you to be here, we want to commit to you. not something he's really had in his career before, college or NFL. And there's probably some value in stability for himself, for his family, and just to have at least some illusion of security. We know that NFL contracts are not, you know, worth the paper they're printed on, but at least that feeling of this is where I'm going to put down roots for a little while. There's definitely value in that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So once again, you know, you come out of last season wondering if, based on kind of some of those comments that he had made and that high cap number, and obviously Kenny Pickett in town that, you know, going to be your starter moving forward. You wondered if he might make, if he wouldn't make it past March 15th. And not only did he do that, he's got a new deal by almost May 15th on top of it. So, this is a team that's, you know, hoping to put all the pieces together in these next couple of years. And, you know, maybe that's another thing that he's looking at is, I think this team can potentially compete for a Super Bowl during these 3 years that I'm now under contract for.
Sure. I'm sure that's a thought as well. And so I have to commend Omar Khan and the front office, because whatever message they're sending these quarterbacks and getting Rudolph to return, getting Trubisky to ink the long-term deal again, there's reasons for those guys to want to do that, but they're selling it well to get these guys to come back and commit, things that I did not expect to happen. So again, I was wrong on both those things. I was right in the sense of they were going to keep Trubisky, and then the brief conversation that occurred post Rudolph signing up, is that going to threaten Trubisky's spot? We both had the conversation Wednesday. Don't really expect that to be the case. Now, obviously, will not be the case. But yeah, I think for Pittsburgh, you feel good about your room right now. And with the extension of Trubisky, you feel good about that room in the future as well.
Yeah, agreed. And I don't think we have to worry about them drafting a quarterback anytime soon, right?
Thank goodness for that. I'm happy to spend the capital on some guys who can, you know, hopefully play and contribute. And that's my thought. I know that Rudolph was a draft pick and Pittsburgh moved up to get him. People kind of forget that aspect. I think they jumped Cincinnati because the Bengals might have taken him. But I like signing the veteran guy as opposed to the draft pick that you have to try to develop. And they're so hit and miss. The success rate is so low. Get the veteran guy that kind of had the highs and lows and worked out all the kinks in other places like Chicago, and sign that guy. Yeah, you got to spend some more for him, but I'd rather spend a couple million extra for the veteran type guy than go spend a fourth round draft pick with low success rates anyway. So I always like that approach of let the other team, you know, figure this guy out and let him kind of take his lumps, and then you go sign him. That's kind of what happened with Trubisky. A little weird route because he was signed to be the starter in 2022, but point is, you're getting a veteran established backup for a reasonable amount of money. It's not crazy high. And of course, Kenny Pickett on his rookie deal, it's a cheap quarterback room overall. So all of that to say is it's a pretty good place to be for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And look, 5.7 new money average is, you know, that's cheap, you know, especially with the cap continuing to go up and all like that. Now you don't have to worry, you know, you hope you don't have to worry about it for the next couple of years.
How much, I know that we don't know the exact number on Rudolph, but we can probably put a good guesstimate on it. How much cap space will be tied up in the Steelers quarterback room of Pickett, Trubisky, and Rudolph for 2023? Do you know what that number roughly could look like?
As far as cap dollars goes?
You can do cash or cap, but at least cap, because I just want to know the allocation of money of the top three there.
Okay. I would look once again for Trubisky's cap number to probably drop by about four million. So that's 6.625 there. Rudolph, I'm kind of estimating him to come in around what Zach Gentry's was, around a cap number of 1.2325, something like that. So that puts us around, I don't know what, 8 million. And then Kenny Pickett's number this year is, where is it?
Obviously, it's not crazy.
Almost 3.2.
Okay, so call it a little over 11 million for the quarterback room. I think that's a really cheap way to go about that when you look at the room kind of as a whole.
Yeah, I would agree there for sure. Absolutely. And now we'll just wait to see what the exact details are.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have that for Monday's show. Actually, I don't know if we'll know the numbers by Monday in terms of when numbers get updated, but hopefully sooner than later on that. So Yeah, I mean, what else does Omar Khan have for us? I mean, that is a big surprise there. So any other final thoughts on the Trubisky extension news, Dave?
Nah, just now, just waiting once again for the exact numbers to come in.
All right, in less exciting Steelers transactional news, and this was officially announced on Thursday, Pittsburgh was sitting at 88 guys on their 90-man roster ahead of Tuesday's upcoming OTAs, and now they're at 89 with the signing of offensive tackle Dylan Cook, an undrafted free agent out of Montana in 2022, spent last year in Tampa Bay on their practice squad, signed a futures contract in January, was waived after rookie minicamp, and is now in Pittsburgh as a Steeler. Really cool backstory. He was a quarterback for a couple years in college at Montana State Northern, and then he switched and transferred to Montana, bulked up, became their right tackle for his last couple of seasons in college. And he goes about 6'6", 300 plus pounds with 33.5-inch arms. And so he's a guy that's going to be some tackle depth. And we knew this team was going to sign at least one more tackle because just from a number, you know, roster construction standpoint for your 90, they were one light. We thought it would be that XFL tackle, Chidi Okoke, and obviously that did not pan out. So Dylan Cook is now number 89 on this roster.
We finally got the tackle room filled up, didn't we?
Finally did.
And I expect that to just be a one-year deal for the minimum. That should come in at $750,000. I think he just has practice squad experience overall. I don't think right. He's appeared in the NFL game yet and all. So, I'm going to be interesting to see if he can hang on and you know, compete, maybe be a guy for the practice squad as time goes on. But, you know, we've said several times, especially heading into the draft, they had what, three tackles under contract heading into the draft in Dan Moore Jr., Chukwuma Okorafor, and LaRaven Clark. And now you've got a handful more on top of it. So I wouldn't expect, you know, barring injury, them to probably add any more tackles on their 90-man roster.
Yeah, you still think if they're a little bit light there, usually you want, you know, six, you would think, three teams, three offensive line groupings. You got two tackles each. And so they're sitting at kind of five. I mean, Cook is four. I mean, Spencer Anderson probably plays some tackle for you, so you can kind of call him five. I don't know if somebody's going to be kicking out or doing something else there. So, you know, I wonder if they're going to keep looking for some extra tackle depth maybe later in the offseason.
Well, we got a long time. You got several OTA practices to go and a mandatory mini camp to go before even training camp starts. So we got plenty of time to watch that for sure.
Sure. And still one spot remaining, of course, and barring any sort of release or any other news that comes across. So they will be, I assume, signing somebody else before Tuesday. Maybe that's an edge guy. They are clearing some cap space here. If they wanted to go sign a more veteran type for agent, that would be on the table, I'm sure. Inside linebacker, potentially. They bring in Quan Alexander. He's left without a contract. And so could they still look to add to that position? That does feel a bit thin. All things to think about. It may not be a big name kind of guy, although, again, it could be. But they are going to sign at least one more guy here, probably in the coming couple of days for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and it well, you know, whoever look, we try to everybody wants to say, well, they're clearing this cap space. What does it mean? For starters, the you got to look at this Trubisky deal as them wanting him around past. First and foremost, the main reason of that was to keep him past 2023. So, right. A byproduct of that is that you lower his cap number, right? And, you know, I would like to think that probably when they sat down with their meetings ahead of the offseason that and trying to map out what they wanted to get done, that, you know, Trubisky would be in their plans and that their cap situation probably had, you know, two ways to go, getting them done or not getting them done there. At any point, you know, I want to reemphasize this. You can find a way to add, you know, to this roster, especially the cap space that they had before this Trubisky deal, you know, because, you know, first years, you know, if you're talking about even a 1-year deal at $3 million for a player, you could have fit that in And obviously for a multi-year deal, the first year cap hit usually is on the lower side with that. So you can make that work. So I know everybody's getting excited. Well, look, they cut Witherspoon and extended Trubisky and clearing this cap space. What does it mean? I mean, you still got one roster spot open, obviously. And if you're going to add, you could go three different directions with this spot, right? Slot corner, inside linebacker with like a Quan Alexander or an edge rusher, right? So I just would temper expectations as far as the value of such a player at this point.
Yeah, just to be clear, the release of Witherspoon, the extension of Trubisky was not done with the specific primary intent of clearing cap space. That's the byproduct of, okay, Witherspoon, OTAs are coming up. We know you're not making the team. Let's all just, wipe our hands clean so you don't come into OTAs, get hurt. We're kind of stuck with you. And Trubisky is, he wants to get the deal done. You say, yes, let's get the deal done today. And Omar Khan's been pretty aggressive about getting these deals done earlier than later. Minka sure last June, Trubisky now in May. Deontay was not done a 12th hour deal. It was in camp, but it wasn't the last second like Watt, like Troy years back. And so same with Chris Boswell. So Omar Khan is basically the mindset of, let's not mess around here. If you want to get a deal done, let's get it done. Let's get it done early.
All right. So Highsmith up next before camp starts, right?
And who knows when that could happen tomorrow, for all we know, is the way that Omar Khan's going at this thing.
And was it Minka done right after OTAs and in the middle of June?
It was in June. I don't know the exact timeline based on OTAs, but yeah, it was early. It was done in June.
Because, I mean, do you really want to get in another situation where, Highsmith says, the old lock in the hold in type situation. Not saying that he would do that, but if he knows that there's a potential of a deal coming, he probably wouldn't want to risk it too much, in camp. So if we learned anything last season about, them, obviously they didn't get Deontay done until after camp started, but maybe there is a chance that they get him done earlier.
And I do wonder if these kind of new age hold ins are kind of pushing teams like Pittsburgh to get some of these deals done earlier. Yeah, Deontay wasn't done until mid camp, but he was back practicing. I don't know. It was a week or a half, week and a half, 2 weeks into camp. So he still got the preseason and, got a good chunk of the summer to ramp up. And so, obviously in Pittsburgh, if you hold out, they're not going to negotiate. That's been a longstanding rule for quite some time. So before the hold-in became popular, guys would just have to come and practice. And there wasn't a lot of pressure on Pittsburgh to get a deal done right away. But I think with these hold-ins and the negative effects that come along with that, not getting reps, being a bit rusty and trying to, get ready for the season, probably puts a bit of pressure on the team to let's get this thing done early so we can kind of avoid just any of the messiness that comes with the hold-in.
I'm kind of expecting a Highsmith deal before camp now.
Yeah, the rate this thing goes. And then again, just to kind of go back to what this team could use for that 90th spot, it may be somebody like a Dylan Cook that's not a big name, but, Kyle Van Noy. Go bring him in, somebody that can play off ball, can play some edge. I think that would be, a good fit for Pittsburgh.
I agree. And we've written a couple of posts about him as well too. And it would match up if he would be the guy, especially, on a deal kind of similar to what he had last year with the Chargers and all. So maybe that's a name to watch.
Yeah. So we'll let you know who that 90th guy is. Again, I would expect that name to be known pretty soon, probably by Monday is my guess, but we'll just let you know whenever that information rolls in. Dave, I know that the whole conversation right now is the Mason Rudolph signing, the Trubisky extension, TJ Watt falling into his own pool, all that kind of stuff. But the best news, the biggest news, the news that grabs me the most is they're hiring two more scouts. And I love the scouting stuff. I love the front office movement. And so reportedly not made official by the team, but reportedly team will be hiring two scouts for this upcoming draft cycle in Jim Ward and Zach Crockett. Crockett probably more, well, Ward's a familiar name, but Zach Crockett, a more familiar specific name, the former fullback for the Raiders. He was scouting with them. He's now coming into Pittsburgh, and Jim Ward, a Pittsburgh native, previously with Philadelphia. He'll come back with Andy Weidel and be a scout for the Steelers. And so that's some front office additions and shuffling to talk about.
All right. And I know you watch that like a hawk.
I do. And just to add some quick context of what these guys might be doing, they're area scouts. And so I expect Ward, who's been a Midwest area scout, to replace Mark Gorsuch, who's stepping down in his role after almost 30 years in Pittsburgh. Gorsuch, for a long time, was the Southern area scout. In 2023, he became the Midwest area scout, basically replacing what Dan Colbert did when he was an area scout before his promotion upward in Pittsburgh's front office. I believe he's now the director of college scouting. And so with Gorsuch gone, you've got to replace that territory. Ward should do that. Zach Crockett's been a Southeastern scout for a long time. He's from Florida, went to Florida State. And so he should replace our old friend Rick Verpriech, who was gone after 2022. Pittsburgh never really replaced that territory for 2023. It was kind of a bit of Mark Sadowski, some Phil Kreidler, a little bit kind of sort of Dan Rooney Jr. So there really was nobody to truly cover that region. And so I assume Crockett's being brought in to really have a more dedicated guy for this 2023-2024 draft cycle.
We're going to have to reprogram our face recognition software.
Somebody in the comments on the Crockett signing said, if you could let Dave and Alex know your hat color, would be appreciated. So we don't have to go searching for it. But we're gonna find it there, Mr. Crockett.
Yeah, we will. If you're there, the camera will get you. They usually always do. That's funny. And I don't know if we're gonna at some point be able to have Mark Gorsuch on. I think we're kind of in the background, kind of efforting that here. It'd be nice to talk to him, you know, before training camp gets underway, and maybe he'll agree to do 15 minutes with us or something. But that might he's on Twitter. He's got to see that stuff that we put out there, right?
On I him. Hope so.
And I don't know. It might be a little bit awkward there. Omar Khan was talking. Did you hear Khan talking about the process and on McAfee and, you know, the things, how they might want to change to be less predictable and all like that. And they have to see that stuff, you know, and look, you know, although it wouldn't be good for business for us, you know, it does seem like this past year in the pre-draft process, not a whole heck of a lot changed, and it made it super easy on us to, you know, process of elimination and all like that. You could probably, you know, if you did that with every team around sure. the league, you know, come up with some. But how many teams around it around the league have what's essentially a 23-year cycle now? And let's face it, that's what it is, right? Even though we've only been a part of it for, you know, half that time. But and really a little bit less than that when we started getting religious about it. But I mean, we know what to look for, and we know how to kind of, you know, decipher it and go from there. So anyway, that's funny. It would be interesting to get Mark Gorsuch on, and I could come up with some good questions for him, and I know you could too.
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons of stories. You're right. Pittsburgh's a predictable team, but it's partly because we study it so intently. You can't come off the street and know who they're going to want, who they're going to take. You really have to kind of, you know, work at it. And I think, to your point, although Pittsburgh's had that turnover recently because that core's in place of Omar Khan, who was trained by, you know, Kevin Colbert, Mike Tomlin being here, Art Rooney being here. You know, if you're in these other places where they're changing GMs and head coaches every 4 seconds, by the time you get a feel for somebody's tendency, they're gone and a new, you know, regime is in, and you got to relearn the whole thing. And so it's probably a lot harder to, you know, figure out what the Texans are doing because they're changing coaches every single, mm-hmm. you know, season. So I think there's certainly that continuity that makes them just more predictable because there is that continuity.
And then you also have a lot of scout turnover when new GMs at all come in as well, too, you know?
Right. Although Pittsburgh's had quite a bit for the longest time. Right. Those scouts were, you know, firmly cemented in place, and partly because they're all getting older and retiring. Phil Kreidler's probably next to retire here, I'd imagine, soon, maybe next year. But you're getting, you know, quite a bit of turnover in the scouting staff for the first time in a long time for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, you are correct, sir.
All right, Dave, we do have a couple more pieces of news to get to, but we'll take a pause here and come back with our Steelers Depot roundtable of Jonathan Heitschritter, Josh Carney, and Tyler Wise to get their thoughts on the draft, their impact in the 2023 Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll take a break and come back with the guys.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And as promised at the top of the show, another part two of the Steelers Depot Roundtable with Josh Carney, Tyler Wise, and Jonathan Hightritter. Appreciate all the work these guys have put in over draft season and post-draft, which has felt just as busy as the pre-draft process. So want to thank you guys for all being here. Kind of a partly, you know, draft review show, but also partly now that the draft is a couple weeks away, looking towards, I think, maybe more specifically how these rookies can impact Pittsburgh in 2023. So, Jonathan, I'll start with you. Just ask the big blanket question, and I know it's kind of vague, but, you know, what rookie or maybe, you know, rookies in terms of the top two guys that you think could really make the biggest impact on the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2023?
Yeah, so just kind of looking at like the draft in its entirety and where guys were kind of drafted and slotted in the positions, like I think you kind of have to start at the top with left tackle Broderick Jones, and just if he has the opportunity to win the job in camp or say early on in the season, if Dan Moore struggles, I think just like his athleticism and what he brings, particularly in the run game, especially being able to play next to a vet, potentially like Isaac Seumalo, will just be able to open this running game up even more to where it was like at the end of the 2022 season. I think just that athleticism is just a very big thing that he kind of brings to the table. And then when you're kind of looking at the guys in the second round, obviously Joey Porter Jr. is kind of a guy that you look at, but I think a guy that could kind of see the field like more early on, especially in the front line, is Keanu Benton, especially getting in that role as probably a rotational maybe nose tackle, and then being able to stay on the field in sub packages just because of the pass rush upside that he does bring. While not being like a Stephon Tuitt or Cam Hayward type of pass rusher, I definitely think that he can be a guy that rotates in with like Cam Hayward, Larry Ogunjobi in sub packages and gives you that pass rush juice that, you know, Pittsburgh really hasn't had in their backup defensive linemen. So I think he can be able to contribute in a rotation role at nose, as well as being able to contribute as a sub package pass rusher.
Tyler, your thoughts just overall on the draft class as a whole, top to bottom, your impressions of the haul that Pittsburgh got?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we were all excited about it. I think it was probably the first one where, you know, I feel like every single guy that the Steelers took, you would have been okay with them taking them around earlier. So that was obviously encouraging. I'm really excited just to see how, just to focus on one particular guy. I mean, Darnell Washington, he was someone that obviously I was excited about. I talked about bringing in a tight end probably early on in the draft process, but was really only kind of focused on Darnell because of his blocking ability. Just cause he's just such a big dude. And, I was watching some Broderick Jones tape yesterday and just again, watching Darnell just move guys on the outside, watching guys down the line, getting blocks on the outside with screens and, you know, jet sweeps and things like that. I mean, he's going to be a true weapon, to use. It's gonna be really exciting to see how they, incorporate him in the offense this year.
Tyler, all of us, we've had, you know, Jonathan, obviously writing about the subject and Josh has as well. And Alex and I have talked quite a bit about Nick Herbig on the podcast since, you know, before he was drafted and since he was drafted, obviously. But and I think we might have talked a little bit with you pre-draft about him. But where do you weigh in on Nick Herbig, you know, positionally and, you know, post-draft now?
Yeah, so I mean, I always kind of viewed Herbig as an inside guy. I mean, it's tough because obviously it's tough when there's zero tape of where you kind of project him to play. But at the same time, I just don't see him keeping him outside. I just don't see as a long term solution. After who I don't know if it was Alex or Josh just had a great article the other day about his run defense on the edge. And I mean, I think that's really where it comes down to. I mean, last year he did have, you know, his pass rush win rate, I think was like 23.9%. for PFF. And, you know, that's obviously a good weapon to have there, but that's probably, I would say that probably limits you to, you know, 8 to 10, you know, snaps a game on the outside. So, I mean, I think if they can, you know, start to incorporate him inside and you know, play there, kind of the same trajectory as Lawrence Timmons was actually somebody I was just looking up his, I love that relative athletic score kind of compared to, and him and Lawrence Timmons actually line up pretty perfectly. So it's kind of funny to just kind of see how that's kind of exactly how he was kind of viewed when he was coming in. He was an outside linebacker. They're like, is he going to play inside or outside? And then he obviously found his home inside. So I'm hoping that's where he ends up. Obviously, I mean, he has great hand usage as well. I mean, on the outside, he, you know, he had a lot of good chops, swipes, you know, push and pulls and things. And I think that translates well to him moving inside, because I mean, I view being an inside linebacker, the number one thing for me is seeing if guys can block shed. And I think he can definitely do that with his quickness, with his hand usage and everything like that. So it will really just kind of be coming down to, you know, seeing the field from, you know, obviously a different view. And if he can, you know, adjust those angles and reading the offense and pulls and everything like that, will be good. So obviously, there still has, you know, we don't know what he's like in man coverage. Even at Wisconsin, he was really only used a zone drop. So that will obviously be another transition, but his athletic profile doesn't really necessarily say he can't do that either. So it's all going to be something we hopefully see through training camp in the preseason and go from there.
My next question would be, you know, to all of you, what is the, when you turn on the tape with Joey Porter Jr., what is the first thing that sticks out to you about him? Either positively or negatively.
This guy is long, man. Like, he is super long. Like, you look at just his height, you know, standing a little over 6'2" and just like that arm length. Like, I think he recorded like over 34 inch arms or at the cornerback position, which is just ridiculous. Like, his hands are just dangling to his knees, and just seeing that length on tape, just, you know, when he like sets up in like a press man situation at the line of scrimmage, like his arms are kind of like cocked back, ready to give that one arm jab. And you just see that length, like, you know, he's not the quickest guy when it comes to like, you know, his transitions and being able to click and close. But at the same time, just his length and his like size and his frame allow him to still be in position to at least contest passes, even when he may be a step off. So like for me, I had a second round grade on Joey Porter Jr. at the very start of the pre-draft process, just because I was like concerned in terms of like his spatial awareness, being able to play the ball in the air all the time, being able to just, he still deals with being a little bit grabby, kind of like what he struggled with a lot the year prior. He kind of cut down on that this year, but still something that you see pop up in tape against, especially some of the best receiving competition that he faced. And he just kind of can be a little bit slow in his transitions, just because he's naturally a little bit more tight hip, being a taller, more angular player. But just that length and that size will always allow him to be in position unless he like gets badly burnt on a rep. So that's something that definitely sticks out with him, is just that overall length that he brings to the position, which is so rare.
Josh?
Yeah, I think it's that length and that physicality. I mean, there's games where he just absolutely swallows up receivers. And, you know, of course, some of those receivers he played in the Big Ten were smaller than what you're going to see week to week in the NFL. But it's certainly eye-opening, that length and physicality that he has at the position, the comfort he has, you know, in press at the line of scrimmage. As Jonathan said, he is a little tight-hipped. His transitions are a little rough at times, but I mean, when he gets his hands on you, he can really control you at the line of scrimmage and really take away one side of the field. And I'm curious to see how that translates to the NFL, because he's going to be facing, you know, bigger, faster, stronger receivers, guys that are very good at beating press. So I'm curious to see how he develops in that area at the NFL, but the length is truly impressive. And I think there was that clip that the Steelers posted of him walking into the facility, you know, ahead of rookie minicamp, and you could just see the length. It looked like he could scratch his knees standing there. So that's going to be something to watch. And that's something that's definitely jumping off the tape for me when I go back through his Penn State stuff.
Tyler, you like jumping into the wide receiver and defensive back tape?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously his physicality jumps off the tape there, but also just his swagger and his demeanor of how he plays the game will definitely be a nice thing to see on the outside there. I mean, he has some great tape against, you know, Garrett Wilson in 2021, some good reps against Marvin Harrison Jr. in 2022. So he's definitely not not scared to face anybody out there. And I think one thing to take note of will be, I think it'll be really fun to watch him and Pickens kind of line up in the, at Latrobe. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, you saw a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a little maybe fighting, some drawing back and forth at Latrobe between those two. But also, I think it'll be big for him to face Deontay Johnson at training camp. I think he'll be somebody that, you know, with JPJ's kind of movement, I think will actually kind of give him some struggles. And I think that will be a good thing to see, similar to how, you know, Artie Burns and AB kind of face each other. Obviously taking your lumps, but all from learning. Hopefully he learns a little bit better than Artie Burns. But at the same time, I think they'll be a good person to go against and learn from. But yeah, I mean, JPJ was super fun to watch. I mean, seeing him at the Purdue game, I think it was the first game of the season I watched live. And that was really where, you know, it was kind of floated around where it was like Joey Porter Jr., you know, Steelers, everything like that for obvious reasons. But when I watched that game and saw how he kind of suffocated them and, you know, quick game and every time they targeted him, I think he it felt like he got the hands on the ball. So that's just the type of player he can be. And it was exciting for him to be there at 32.
Yeah, six pass breakups in that Purdue game, probably his best of the season. Josh, to go back to you and to stick with another big corner that was taken later in seventh round pick, Corey Trice Jr., who I think we all understood talent-wise, tape-wise, a better player than seventh round great, but there's some medical concerns there. Where do you see him potentially fitting in this defense on this team in 2023? Obviously, there may not be a role for him right away, but could he have any impact beyond special teams for Pittsburgh his rookie season?
Yeah, I think that's kind of tough to project right now because we don't really know what he's going to be. He could be that sub-package corner. Obviously, he was a safety early on in college, moved to corner, and obviously worked his way into being a draftable guy. But he's another long physical corner, has some really good tape. Hopefully, the knee is checked out at this point. But I just don't know that he's going to have that type of impact right away here in 2023. Obviously, there's been some moves on the depth chart that have certainly gone his way at this point, with Akello Witherspoon being released, Arthur Millett released as well. But I think projecting and maybe potentially expecting him to have a role here this upcoming season is a bit of a stretch. But he's a guy that probably without the medicals should have gone second, third round. So it would not shock me if he works his way into a role here in Pittsburgh, kind of like a Levi Wallace early on.
Jonathan, Steelers signed six undrafted free agents after the draft. And David and I should have mentioned that we have signing bonuses for all those guys, and that model for Pittsburgh has not changed. It's a pretty cheap class that's not as attractive looking as some others. But give me a name of the six guys that were signed that you want to keep an eye on this summer, somebody that could really, you know, have a chance to stick on this team in some capacity.
I think just kind of looking at the roster or the UDFAs that they brought in and the roster as it stands currently right now, we don't really know if they're going to bring in another edge rusher or whatnot to compete possibly with Herbig. Does Herbig kick inside? And after that, okay, you have Quincy Roche and then who else? So I think Perales from Fresno State makes a lot of sense for me. Just that guy that plays with his hair on fire. He doesn't have like the greatest size profile in the world in terms of like length, but he also kind of fits the mold of like not this like super long, kind of like more stout, like aggressive pass rusher that Pittsburgh has kind of found in the past with the, you know, draft picks or UDFAs. You just watch his film at Fresno State, how he is able to get after the quarterback and be able to provide that pass rush. I think he's a guy to kind of keep your eye on, especially is able to make some plays early on in training camp. And then, yeah, if he is able to make a couple of splash plays in the preseason, you know, record maybe two sacks, maybe a forced fumble, make a play or two on special teams, I think that's his way to be able to get on the roster. And, you know, if Herbig doesn't stick at outside linebacker, they don't bring in like a Cal Van Noy or a seasoned vet, and he's competing with guys like, you know, Quincy Roche and other guys that are on the back end of the roster, I think he could easily find himself as that, you know, core special teamer and really work his way into that outside linebacker four.
Tyler, I know you turned on the Perales tape. The one thing I know that jumped out at me in looking is just his there's a lot of effort sacks in there. I know overall, just the overall effort on him. What jumped out about you about Perales?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched base on it. His motor was kind of unrelenting. I know there was a few plays against USC last year that it was like I think Caleb Williams was running around for about 20 seconds and Perales finally got him down there. So, I mean, I think that's really the biggest thing. I mean, I kind of saw some like Anthony Ciccolo to his game, kind of just that type of player. Not super high ceiling or anything like that, but I think he'll, you know, he probably may make some plays on special teams, and you know he'll definitely be a guy that can probably get some motor sacks if there are, you know, take the coverage at, if there's good coverage in the back end and everything. I'm not sure if you're going to see him win too cleanly, but yeah, I mean, if we're going off of UDFA guys too, I got to talk a little bit about Jordan Bird. From San Diego State. He's somebody that, you know, I don't see him probably making the team, but, you know, if he has some, he's a, you know, kick return guy that averaged, you know, 25 yards per kick return in his career at San Diego State through five seasons. He did a little bit in the passing game as well, and they had him as a running back. I think the Steelers might have listed him as a receiver, though.
They do. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that'll be interesting to see there. He was a, you know, state champion. I think I want to say 3 or 4 times state champion, track and field runner for 100 meter dash in New Mexico. So that will definitely be kind of interesting to see him. You know, it'll be exciting to see some second when you're sitting back in the second half of some preseason games and seeing him return from kicks will be fun. I'm not sure. He didn't really have as much success as punt returns. He only averaged about six yards. For that, so but he does have a punt return touchdown as well. So if he can, you know, return one or two here in the preseason, you know, maybe he does, you know, open up a spot for him. But from there, it's probably the most exciting guy, I would say, for me in the UDFA class.
He'd have to pull a Stephon Logan, is what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
we talk, it seems like every year we talk about poor Stephon Logan. He just he gets mentioned in that light, but without a doubt he was given, you know, because of that you know what he did that one preseason there, ended up making the 53-man roster. And I'm sure Mike Tomlin brings that up to these guys, you know, every offseason as part of, hey, you could be this guy here. Alex, go ahead.
Just to kind of look towards the Steelers 2023 season, Josh, I'll start with you. What's your outlook on this team? I think it's a better roster. It's a clearer, more cohesive plan and vision for how Pittsburgh wants to win. But of course, the AFC North is ultra competitive. The AFC at large has the majority of the best quarterbacks in football. What are your feelings about the Steelers team as we sit here on May 19th?
I got to say, I'm pretty high on this team overall. I mean, yeah, there's still some question marks and some holes, you know, depth at inside linebacker, depth behind TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith at outside linebacker, slot corners up in the air. But Omar Khan did a really good job of addressing the holes on this roster, bringing in guys that clearly fit what they want to do on both sides of the football, you know, and then building off of what they did last season in the second half, going 7-2 down the stretch. There's a clear identity. I think that style works for them and certainly works in the NFL today. It's all cyclical, and it feels like that power rushing attack is coming back, and Pittsburgh's, you know, at the head of the curve here in a sense. But I'm high on this team. I know the AFC North is going to be very difficult. I know the AFC overall is loaded, but this team grew up last year. They certainly got the growing pains out of the way, and I think it's all going to come down to if Kenny Pickett can take that step forward in year two. But he's got all the tools around him. The offensive line is rebuilt in a big way. Feel very good about that group heading into the year. Defense, as long as they stay healthy, they're going to be one of the best ones in the league. I'm very high on this team. I don't want to put a number on wins at this point, but I feel good about it. And I think a lot of Steeler fans will as well.
Jonathan, let me ask you kind of a slightly different way. Do you like the plan that Pittsburgh's building? And it seems to me their plan is let's be countercultural to where most of the NFL sits today in terms of the high-flying offenses, big aerial attacks, you know, going to score 30-plus points per game. I think Pittsburgh says we're not going to be able to compete with the Mahomes, the Josh Allens of the world. Let's play bully ball. Let's control the ball. Let's win time of possession. Let's play the best defense by putting Mahomes on the sidelines. Do you think that's a plan that could, A, work in the regular season, but B, more importantly, could that plan work in a playoff game against one of those top offenses?
Yeah, I'm going to quote Mike Tomlin, and he's saying, like, if you have red paint, you paint the barn red. So it's just you look at what you have at your disposal. And while we have yet to see, like, if Kenny Pickett can take that next step in terms of being this team's franchise quarterback, and what does that exactly mean? Can he be Ben Roethlisberger-esque? Is he a shade underneath that? Like, is he a guy that you want throwing the ball 45, 50 times a game? Or is he a guy that you want to throw 20, 25, maybe 30 times a game, but, you know, find the identity of your offense in a power running game? And I'd like the idea and the identity that the Steelers are embracing, especially on the offensive side of the ball, of zigging when everyone else is zagging, in terms of embracing that high-flying passing offense, just because you look just kind of at the quarterback specifically in the AFC, like whether it be Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, like Kenny Pickett physically is not in the same category as those guys. But you look at what he does well, like what he had in his those clutch moments down the stretch against the Raiders and against the Ravens, being able to methodically move the offense down the field, cutting down on the turnovers in the second half of the season, and being able to put this team in position to win games late. So you look at that, and you look at what they currently had in terms of a first round pick on with running back at Najee Harris, and just being able to support Pickett the best he can. I think they did a great job of building an offense that can kill you in multiple different ways, but is centered around, okay, if we can run the ball, we're going to run the ball until you can't stop us anymore. Kind of like what the Tennessee Titans like to do with Derrick Henry. And, you know, the Titans weren't very good this past year, but in the past, like, they've had a lot of success in the regular season, and they've made some noise in the playoffs as well too. I think getting, like, as far as like almost the AFC championship game just a few years ago. Is it a recipe for success to be able to outduel Mahomes and Allen that can score in a blink of an eye? Possibly not. I mean, that's where you have to really focus on building up this defense the right way. And I think that Khan and Andy Weidel in the front office has done a very good job of looking at, you know, the trenches, being able to invest there, being able to invest in quality cover men to be able to complement the offense as well too. But I think that, you know, based off of what they have at their disposal, they're able to create a winning football team that should be at least able to compete with these like AFC powerhouse teams, compared to like when they walked into Buffalo last year, everyone knew they were going to kind of get slapped, and they did get slapped. They have a team that can control the clock, that can play stout defense, much like they did in the second half of the season. And yeah, I think this is a team that can, you know, that should make a push for the playoffs, at least as a wild card. And, you know, if things break right, maybe split with the Bengals, split with the Ravens, and, you know, maybe push for the AFC North.
Tyler, I think still, despite all the upgrades that Pittsburgh has made, everything kind of comes down to Kenny Pickett. So what do you think Kenny Pickett has to do in year two to make that jump? Not to be on a Mahomes level, obviously, but just to become somebody that can really compete and win a playoff game. What's something he really has to do in order to make that jump?
Yeah, so I think we have to, you know, see him win games with his arm. You know, there were plenty of games during, you know, Ben Roethlisberger's career that we saw, you know, him outduel some people. And even thinking back to his last year, the duel he had with Justin Herbert, which they eventually lost. But, you know, those are the types of games I think that you saw the Steelers not be able to stay in last year. Obviously, the Bills game, the first Bengals game, it started out well. But then that kind of died off too. So, I mean, I think that's really where we haven't seen him win yet. We've seen him, you know, have those late, you know, late fourth quarter drives, which is great. That's, you know, that's obviously something that, you know, he's proven winner in that way. He's not, you know, afraid of the moment. But we really haven't seen any games yet that, you know, he's, you know, thrown for, you know, four touchdowns, 300 yards, stuff like that, that, you know, really just kind of being like, you know, teams are, you know, loading up to stop the run, got to be in with the pass. And that's I think, really where we're going to see him make his big jumps going into this year.
I want to stay with Tyler here. Much like, you know, Owen Straley has become kind of our DB go-to guy when it comes to the tape and pre-draft and in season. You've kind of done that with the wide receiver position overall. I know you really get into the tape on the wide receiver stuff in season here. Reception perception, which I think they do an absolutely phenomenal job with the metrics and the charting and everything that they do. I'm sure you probably recently, you know, kind of read the stuff that they put out there on George Pickens, and I think, you know, more so the separation aspect of his game. Where are you at right now on George Pickens overall with his game coming out of his rookie season into his second season?
Yeah, so I know I saw there was a little bit of an uproar about that. And I mean, I thought what they said about, I mean, he didn't create separation last year. I mean, that was something that, you know, we kind of talked about a good bit. I mean, he still has to improve greatly as a route runner. You know, there's only so many times, so many, you know, goes and things and you can kind of go through. Yeah, exactly. There's only so many times that can, I mean, if that's your one trick pony, it's a little, it's not what you initially think is a one trick pony, like Mike Wallace just going deep. But yeah, I mean, I think he definitely is still super raw as a route runner and being able to, you know, notice, you know, holes in zones and sit in them. And hopefully he's working, you know, a little bit with Deontay, and they're not the same player by any means. So he's never going to be a Deontay type, you know, route runner by any means. But I mean, that's something that he definitely has to work on this year. I mean, just getting the, you know, getting all the nuance of the position down. And we knew that coming out too. I mean, that was something that, you know, he didn't play a ton at Georgia. Obviously he was injured for a good portion of that. So, I mean, I think he's in a good spot, but saying that, I think, I don't even know what metric they were saying about him being a poor zone player, I guess. Which was one of the first things I've actually never even heard of that before as a receiver. But, you know, I think there's definitely great parts of his game, but even having a guy like Allen Robinson in the room too, is something that, you know, we've talked about having a veteran presence in the room. They haven't really had one. I mean, I guess you can say Antonio Brown, but how good of a veteran presence truly was he? I'm not exactly sure, but you know, even someone like Juju too. I mean, I never really saw him as a guy, you know, being that veteran presence. He's a super young kid, and you know, I just don't think that was really his role at that point yet. So having somebody like Allen Robinson in the room that can truly, you know, knows how to be an NFL player truly will help, I think, everybody there. So and even so, I mean, even having him out there, you know, I'm sure you'll see him split out wide a good bit, even though we see him kind of as that big slot role. You know, moving him around the offense as well would be fun to watch. And I'm sure he'll teach George Pickens a thing or two as well.
Even after the draft at this point right now, it seems like the most of the lines out there as far as win totals, the over under on that is still right around 8.5 overall. And I, you know, as objective as I like to be, and I'm, you know, as Alex likes to be, even so, the Steelers finally announcing a new 3-year contract for Mitchell Trubisky here. Of course, we knew that going into today, but they're making it official right now. So hopefully we'll have the terms out here pretty soon. But back to what my point here, 8.5 win total. I know I'm hammering the 8.5 over right now. I would imagine Alex is as well. My question is what might we be missing as analysts or as a fan base of why that win total is only 8.5?
I think you look at just the team in its entirety and how much, like, this is a much improved roster from head to toe compared to where it was a season ago. But I think the thing that you have to consider is, like, does Kenny Pickett take a leap in year two, and how great is that leap? Like, you look at how he played down the stretch last year, it was definitely improved from an on-field perspective. But then if you are just, like, you know, scouting like the stats and whatnot, like, he didn't have a very good statistical season for rookie quarterbacks. Like, it was, he threw more interceptions than touchdowns. He had moments where he, like, would lock onto receivers. And it's just, he wasn't throwing for a whole lot of passing yards. And again, like, they threw for 12 touchdowns as a team last year. Like, it was not good. So, you know, does he take a step forward, and how great is that step forward? Especially when you're considering, like, the teams in the AFC, let alone the AFC North, with Joe Burrow and the Bengals likely being the favorite right now, Lamar Jackson inking a new deal and being able to have that stability in Baltimore. And then you have the Cleveland Browns with a whole year of Deshaun Watson and a full offseason, as well as them making moves as well throughout the offseason, much like the Steelers have. So the big thing is just betting on Kenny Pickett to take that leap. And, you know, what if that's, you know, posting 3,000 passing yards, 20 plus touchdowns, whatever it is. Like, he doesn't have to become a Pro Bowler by any standard, but he needs to take a big enough leap to be like, okay, this team can be a legitimate contender, not only in the AFC North, but also in the AFC, and make this team like a relevant playoff team.
Josh, why should somebody consider the under 8.5?
That is a great question. Can I just say Matt Canada? I mean, that's got to be that feels like that's what it is at this point. There's still a lot of concerns about the offense, the play calling. You know, I mentioned earlier, they don't really have any holes on the offensive side of the football. They've addressed a lot of it. They've added a lot of talent. But I think that Canada is kind of that dark cloud over the offense in a sense. You know, last year was not good by any stretch of the imagination from a play calling and scheme standpoint. And he's still around. You know, the players have improved offensively, but there is still a huge question mark with the guy in charge of calling the plays. And then I think you can still kind of circle cornerback right now as an outsider is maybe a potential concern. You've got a lot of unproven guys there behind Patrick Peterson and Levi Wallace. You're going to be counting on a rookie, Joey Porter Jr. You know, Chandon Sullivan right now is penciled in as the slot option. And by every metric, he was one of the worst in the league last year. But I think if you're going to, you know, hit the under with the Steelers, I think it's because of the concerns of the offense and the inability to score points last year and not much changing from a play calling perspective with Matt Canada.
Tyler, how would you sell somebody to hammer the under of 8.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything with the Steelers this year, it's not going to be pretty football. I don't think it's ever been kind of the case in terms of what we're looking at with the Steelers. So it's going to be ugly, you know, and not necessarily in a bad way, but I mean, it's going to be, you know, that slow, grinded out type of game. And, you know, it felt like the Steelers last year, if they gave up, you know, more than 21 points, it was like, well, the game's lost. So just the way the game has changed. That's kind of really what it comes down to. Are they able to score points? Or is their offense able to win games when their defense doesn't step up? That's really last year really felt like it, the offense let down the defense way more than the other way around. And then, you know, it came down to the end of the game and, you know, the defense would give up one touchdown drive in the fourth quarter and then everyone would be like, oh, the defense lost the game. That's kind of where I think it comes down to is that if the offense can, you know, score some points and take some pressure off the defense. But, yeah, I mean, what I was going to say before Josh talks was, yeah, I think the defensive backs are definitely something to be scared of. I think there's a lot of question marks there. And even the edge depth, I mean, that's something I still feel like really hasn't been addressed. And, you know, if TJ Watt goes down, you know, whether it be in his pool or on the field, what's going to happen there? Because then if you don't have that pressure coming off, you know, Highsmith hopefully he takes another step this year, but he wasn't necessarily like the force that we saw him when once Watt went down. So if they're failing to generate pressure, then you're obviously going to have even more pressure on those young cornerbacks and everything like that. So and the other thing is obviously with the different names at cornerback, you're going to have a lot of different changing parts and communication differences from last year to this year in the back end. Hopefully Minkah can fix that up. But I know that was something that, you know, him and Edmonds had a really strong, you know, connection there in terms of communicating and Sutton too. Sutton obviously had a big part of that as well. Just the communication between everybody. And I thought there was there wasn't many coverage busts last year. I think there was a few made by, you know, one player, you know, messing up, but for the most part, I think it was pretty good on the back end there. And if they can still, if they're losing that cohesiveness, is that going to be, you know, fixed up, you know, the first few games of the season?
My last question for you guys, and I'll ask each of you guys for your thoughts here. If you only could pick one player to watch in training camp, or I should say maybe the player you're most excited to see, non-rookie, we'll say, then of the non-rookies, guys returning, most excited to see in training camp, who would it be? Jonathan, I'll start with you, the player you're most excited to watch for whatever reason in 2023 in camp.
I think I'm going to go with a guy who's not a rookie, but I mean, you basically can consider rookie and wide receiver Calvin Austin, just because he's basically had a redshirt year. He's coming in fresh. I mean, he only had a couple practices in training camp last year before his foot injury. And he has this dynamic to the offense, especially to the wide receiver core. Like you have Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Allen Robinson, like guys that, you know, are good, like have decent speed, but they don't have that game changing speed that Austin has. And you just look at the running back room as well with Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris, like again, good runners, but you're not going to like have any of them be this breakaway, burning, blazing speed kind of guy. So I think Austin can be this guy that adds a whole nother dynamic to this offense, whether it be as a screen like jet sweep guy, whether it be as a pass catcher, being able to create after the catch, just being able to make impact possibly in the return game. I think he's a guy that could really help open up this offense a little bit. And that's where I'm very excited to see how he builds off of just the few training camp practices he had last year, and just kind of see how he can take that into preseason action, and if he can become a regular part of this offense, or if he's just going to be relegated to being more of a like a gadget type of guy.
Josh, the player you're most looking forward to watching come this summer?
I'm going to say Landon Roberts. I really liked that signing. I thought he was an ideal buck linebacker for this team. I think he's going to bring that physicality back to this defense that they've kind of been missing since Vince Williams left. So I'm curious to watch him, and I want to see how he works with Mark Robinson, see if he can bring Robinson along. But I think that was a very underrated signing by the Steelers. I think he's going to step in as a real leader of that linebacker room. And I can't wait to see backs on backers. I want to see him go against Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren in those drills, because he brings that physical presence. He's a very good veteran leader. Just really looking forward to seeing what he can bring as soon as he steps on the field there at St. Vincent.
Tyler, same question to you. Player you're most excited to watch this summer?
Yeah, I mean, you guys kind of took both of mine. I was going to go Calvin Austin, and then, but I mean, I'll cheat a little bit and just say the entire linebacker room. I'm not really sure exactly what's going to go on there. You know, it looks like the Steelers are still, you know, adding guys. So, you know, Cole Holcomb, how is he going to play? Is Landon Roberts, how does he fit in? You know, you got Tate Crowder there, Tanner Muse. Are they going to add Kyle Van Noy, Quan Alexander? We don't know what's going to happen there. I think that's really kind of the most exciting room to watch right now, and the most question marks. So really that whole room is something that I'm really interested to see how that plays out. And I mean, I love that Khan kind of reviewed it and saw it. I mean, I think everybody knew it, but just the fact that that room was very, very weak the last, you know, how many years. So you said, screw it, let's just completely turn it over and see what we got here. And I really feel like I recently tweeted out a GIF about the look of the room is that the scene from the Batman movie where the Joker just breaks a pool cue in half and throws it on the ground and says, you know, have at it. And I really feel like that's kind of how the linebacker room feels right now in terms of who's going to really come out on top.
Dave, your thoughts on the player you're most excited to see, and then feel free, you can ask the final question here as we kind of wrap things up, but your thoughts on the most exciting guy you want to see in camp.
Well, I can't have rookies, so
yeah, no rookies.
Washington would have been on that list, and I talk a lot about, you know, Potterbaum, and you know, just excited to see him play some fullback. You know what? I want to see Zach Gentry, see if he can take that next step as or get at least back to the level he was a couple of years ago with the blocking, because I think, you know, this team's going to run a lot of heavy stuff, obviously, for the running game. And I've talked several times about Zach Gentry this offseason, how I don't think his roster spot should be absolutely guaranteed, especially with the money that they gave him. Yes, they went out and got Washington, and, you know, obviously Pat Freiermuth is going to be, you know, a big part of that offense, even in heavy personnel groupings. But what happens when you don't have one of those two guys on the field? There are obviously going to be situations where Gentry has to be the number one or number two, and potentially, depending on injuries, you know, even kind of the number one out there on the field. So this offseason, I want to see Zach Gentry start playing up to that size that he has and the experience that he has in the league. So I think that would be one of, you know, a few that I'd put on that list there.
All right, fair enough. My answer, if anyone cares, is Mark Robinson, kind of like Landon Roberts. But I mean, I get why they brought Roberts in as some veteran depth, but he's the same dude as Mark Robinson. Just play Mark Robinson, the younger guy, the fresher guy, the cheaper guy. But I want to see him in year number two. I think he could be a guy that kind of gets it this year, as opposed to last year was kind of just, you know, flying by the seat of your pants. But Dave, go ahead and finish up the conversation here.
All right, Hakeem Butler, I have a full contextualization coming up on his 73 targets in the XFL. I've got to admit that after watching all the tape, and comparing it to the hype and what I remember, I'm not doing jumping jacks. I'm not running around the room. I'm not, you know, I'm not as excited. I think there's a lot to be excited about him. I think he deserves a chance to be back in the NFL. But within that, you know, what are each of your guys' kind of quick thoughts on Hakeem Butler and his chances of making a roster?
Well, I'll dive in first just because I did the film room on Butler shortly after he signed, and just being an Iowa guy, like being able to watch him in his progression from Iowa State when he was kind of second fiddle to Alan Lazard with the Cyclones, and then how he kind of stepped into that main role the year before he got drafted. And I mean, you just like similar conversation to Joey Porter Jr. You just see the length on this guy. I think he's like 6'5" and 5'8", 220 plus pounds. I mean, he has like nearly 35 inch arms, like almost 11 inch hands. Like the guy is just a walking like skyscraper at the wide receiver position. And you see that play style when he's on the field, just being able to go up and be able to snag balls out of the air, being able to make those combative catches over top and around like defensive backs, being able to make plays and contested coverage against double teams and whatnot. Like, it's very fun to watch. Like, you know, whenever you want to create a player in like Madden and you want to just make a guy that's like 6'6", runs like a 4.34, 4.40, like you're going to create a guy that kind of looks like Hakeem Butler. But then you kind of dive into the negatives as well too. And you just think about like the keys like to the game, and you look at, okay, how does he consistently catch the ball? And does he give consistent effort as a blocker, which is a big point, you know, Tyler often makes in his film room breakdowns. And one thing that kind of stuck out with him is just his drops and his concentration drops. We obviously have gotten on Deontay Johnson about that in the past. And like, he is like a former Pro Bowl or caliber receiver, whereas Hakeem Butler is just trying to make the team. So if he's struggling with these same like focus or concentration drops and not making the routine catches routinely, it's going to be very hard for him to be able to make the roster. Same in point when you have such a big physical receiver, but he's not consistently showing effort in the run game as a blocker. Like, there's times where he will like utilize his size and length and just be able to latch on to defensive backs when you watch his tape. But there's also times where he just kind of like loafing around and just kind of like not being able, giving a half effort. And you never want to see that. Like, especially from the receiver position, when you have a running game where you're looking at, you know, spring explosive plays and double explosive plays. So for him, like, he really needs to focus in on those finite details at the position, just because, yeah, the size is great. Like, the ability to stretch the seam, especially from the slot, is awesome. But those little things are going to be what makes or breaks his chances of making the roster.
Tyler, I know you jumped in. And Hakeem Butler tape, what's the most concerning thing with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think, a lot of people have asked me because I've been posting stuff. And I mean, the biggest thing I see with him is he just doesn't have the, you know, the technical details down in the game. I kind of relate him a lot to, honestly, Chase Claypool, especially in the slot. I mean, he plays too high. You know, and when he's outside and they try to throw 50-50 balls to him, it's just kind of like that same effort. You're not really expecting him to come down with it. You kind of hope for a defense pass interference. Now, he did have a few, you know, contested catches in the XFL, but yeah, I mean, he's not very sudden out of his breaks, and I don't see the 4.43 speed with him at all. He's more kind of a, you know, long strider where, you know, maybe if he's running, you know, flat out straight, you know, he does get that 4.43, but, you know, he's really kind of, he moves more like a tight end, in my opinion. And, you know, because he plays so high, when he does like get wrapped up and tackled, like it feels like he doesn't fall forward much because he's playing so high that guys can kind of just like kind of just fall to the side, and he doesn't have that, you know, that power in that way. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff to like about him. And like, obviously he does have a huge catch radius, and, you know, he does kind of overpower people, you know, through the route. But that was something too, where I posted a few, where he's just literally just pushing guys like 5 yards down the field. And it's like somehow the refs were not calling that. I mean, I'm an always commit offensive pass interference advocate, but at the same time, some of these are like ridiculous. Like, I'll post one after this podcast that he literally is just running a curl route and pushes the guy literally 5 yards down and just like stands there and gets a catch and there's no flag. So those are things he's obviously not going to be able to do in the NFL. And there's being physical at the top of your route, and then there's just flat out, you know, committing penalties. So there's things to like where, you know, he's big, fast. I mean, fast to, you know, a degree for his size. I think he can create some mismatches from the from the slot, but I just don't see his position on this roster, honestly, at this point. I mentioned that too, where as soon as Allen Robinson was signed, it was like, I mentioned, you know, possibly bringing him in, but as soon as Allen Robinson was signed, I feel like that was his roster spot. And I don't see him being a guy that plays special teams remotely close to the ability that Miles Boykin has. So, I mean, maybe he carves out a position, but at this point, I just don't see his spot on this roster.
You guys weren't privy to it because we record it's earlier in this or I don't know if it's earlier. I think it's earlier in this podcast where we'll have it cut in at. But me talking about Butler, and one of the things that I came away from the tape from was I didn't think he had enough contested catches in there for a guy his size. And I think that's kind of what you're saying as well, too. Right, Tyler? I mean, you with his size and his catch radius and the big body and physicality. It feels like I was wanting more contested catches, and I think that's what you're trying to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he had one. I'm trying to think if that was like a corner route that he kind of reached over top of the guy. But other than that, I really felt like anything that was truly contested, he's just not super physical at the catch point, I didn't think. I mean, he really thrived off of being in the XFL and being faster and stronger than everybody else, bigger, faster, stronger than everybody in the XFL. It really seemed like he was, you know, a varsity player playing, you know, Monday night on the JV game. And that's just all going to be, you know, shortened down, and all those, you know, advantages that he has in the XFL is not going to be the case really as much in the NFL. Obviously, in the preseason and stuff, there's going to be some guys that, you know, probably are XFL level players that he can maybe take advantage of. But at the same time, I think those nuances are going to catch up to you. And he's definitely not going to be a guy that you can just put outside and throw 50-50 balls to, like the Steelers try to do with Chase Claypool. You're going to get many of the same results because he's just not that type of guy.
Josh, take us home with Hakeem Butler.
I'm still trying to recover from Tyler saying he reminds him of Chase Claypool. Now I can't get it out of my head.
He doesn't fall backwards. I will say that. I mean, he, you know, on those kind of big balls, I didn't see a lot of that jump and fall on my back, you know, type. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I thought when Tyler pointed him out before the Allen Robinson trade as a slot option, I thought it was a great call by Tyler. And, you know, then obviously they trade for Robinson. And as Tyler said, that kind of takes away Butler's opportunity to land on the 53. And I don't know that he's going to be a guy that wants to stick on a practice squad where he's going to be behind guys, you know, like a Boykin, a Robinson. I do think it will help Butler, though, to get into camp and kind of watch and see how guys like George Pickens and Allen Robinson play as more of those physical contested guys. And hopefully it rubs off on him a little bit. And I am curious to see how he develops, you know, in OTAs, mini camp, training camp with Frisman Jackson overall. But yeah, for a guy his size with his testing numbers, he just didn't make those, you know, those plays at the NFL. He certainly did that in the Big 12 at Iowa State, and that obviously got him on the radar. But he couldn't put it together in the NFL. And quite honestly, I mean, he didn't really get any opportunities either. I think he played one game in the NFL with the Eagles and never quite latched on with Arizona. So I don't see a path for him on the 53. I think he's certainly going to make some highlight reel plays, as Tyler pointed out, in the preseason against those fringe roster guys, XFL guys that has gone against. But he just does not make those contested catches, you know, for his size. And you don't really see the blocking effort overall. So, I don't see him making the 53, but he's certainly an interesting piece to add to that receiver room overall.
All right, guys, I think we're just about out of time here, but cannot thank you enough for being here this morning and offering your insight. And again, just all the work you guys have put in pre-draft, post-draft, and got OTAs coming up. So that's going to keep us all pretty busy in a very, very busy offseason for Omar Khan and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So thank you guys so much, and we'll have you guys on the podcast again sometime soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions.
18 plus.
And welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. And again, our special thanks to Jonathan Heitritter, Josh Carney, and Tyler Wise. Those guys do tremendous work and contribute so much to the site. We cannot thank them enough. So be sure to follow all those guys on Twitter. Dave, as always, a good conversation with all of them.
Yeah, look, we are blessed to have such good contributors across the site. And I think we got, about 25 people now on the staff in total contributing in various ways. And the work those guys did and that group of draft team did, we were thankful enough to be able to send quite a few of them on the road to the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl and obviously the Combine. And we hope to be able to continue that process in years moving forward. And just you know, you learn, you know, if you listen, if you keep your mouth shut and you listen to each other and what all these guys can bring to the table, it helps you speed up the process during the off season, because there's obviously so many of these guys that we try to learn about in a short amount of time, and you and me particularly, because we don't really even get, you know, really start our draft stuff until the week before the draft starts. So yeah, just very thankful to have those guys.
All right, Dave, do a couple other quick stories before we get to some reader emails. You've done through and done the legwork of going through all of Hakeem Butler's targets last year for the XFL, or earlier this year, I should say, for the XFL Battlehawks. Your impressions, that article is a sticky top of the page on Steelers Depot. People should check it out. Dave puts in a ton of time, a lot of good takeaways there. What were some of your conclusions going through Hakeem Butler's tape in the XFL?
First of all, I forgot how much work 73 targets are.
I'm sure at some point you're hoping to have a couple less targets. Can we do 60 targets?
I enjoyed that Allen Robinson one. It was a little bit.
yeah, give me like a good 30.
Yeah, a little bit less there. No, look, I was thankful. I was able to find all the TV tape on all those games and was able to find some play-by-play Excel files that let me instantly at least pull the times of the plays, and that obviously helps. And over the years, I've gotten pretty good about being able to fast forward to certain parts of the tape based on where I think. But you know, one of my main takeaways with him, you know, is obviously he's a big dude, and the second thing is, you know, those he did have the drop problem, and last year with the Battle Hawks, and there were some nasty drops in there for sure. So that's one thing initially that he's going to have to work on.
Okay, and so what was there any specific trend in terms of the drops? Was it where he's taking his eyes off the football, kind of the Deontay Johnson issue? Was it maybe some more ones above his head, outside his frame a little bit more, or like, could you define if you're able to see any sort of pattern in terms of a potential commonality with some of the drops that he had with the XFL?
No, they were all kind of mixed in there overall, to be honest with you. And one, I even shot, you know, one out to you guys to say drop or nah, you know, of one in the end zone that was kind of outside. Look, he's got a great catch radius, you know, and mm-hmm. a big guy like that obviously should, but you know, even that one that I you know sent to you guys in the end zone there, that was up over his head, you know, you kind of felt like he should have had it, to be honest with you. Yeah. There,
I thought it was a drop. It was high, but because he pulled it back into his body, that's where I kind of went, okay, I'm going to call that one a drop. Had it just kind of hit off his fingertip, I might not have called it that, but I thought when he brought it in, he just didn't secure it the whole way.
And correct me if I'm wrong, he had a little bit of a drop problem when he came into the NFL. So, you know, that might be, there does appear on a couple of them to be some concentration issues. And look, even for a guy his size, you know, you can find some contested catch stuff in his tape and all. He's not as, at least in these XFL targets and all, he could be a better contested catch guy. He needs to, especially when he's coming back for the football, he needs to do a better job of continuing to work back to the quarterback, I think, because that him slowing up at times allows the defensive backs to get there and kind of impact that play. And a guy his size, he should be able to use that body better as a shield to prevent that kind of stuff happening, especially on some comebacks. His route running, to be honest with you, at least, you know, targets and scrounging around some of the other tape, it's average. I mean, he's not a twitchy guy. He's a big guy. He can move. He can get off the line. He's not super twitchy. He can run out in space. He can get off the line. I think he does a good job with his hands and arms of gaining separation, especially with the ball in flight at times, especially on stuff on some of those slot fades and working from the inner of the field towards the outside. So I think he does good in that area. Yards after the catch, I thought he did a real, real good job on that. I think nearly around half of his receiving yards last season with the Battlehawks came after the catch. And, you know, probably not surprising, a guy that big, if he can get turned with the football moving the other direction, it's going to be tough to bring down. And I think his average was something like 5-point-something yards gained after the catch on average, which is a, you know, obviously a strong number, and you definitely want to see that correlate with him. He catches the ball in all areas of the field, between the numbers, between the hash marks, all levels of the field too. Man, he had a lot of catches within, you know, 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. However, comma, he had, you know, I forget the exact number. I'm not looking at it. Around a dozen or 10, 8 to 10 or something like that of air yards more than 20 yards down the field. He can catch it, you know, outside the numbers. He's got plenty of catches in that regard. Now, here's one thing that stuck out on tape. They used him a lot on kind of those quick flare outs from the slot, you know, and wide receiver screens as well, too. Those quick wide receiver screens. He's got a good, I think, dozen or so, maybe 15. Once again, I'm not looking at my numbers, of catches that were two or fewer yards from the line of scrimmage. And a good half of those were caught behind the line of scrimmage. But within that, on those kind of catches, I think he does a good job of catching the football and getting up the field. You know, and making yards after the catch there, seems to have a good feel for settling down in the soft zone areas, that kind of stuff. And once again, he can get on the hoof. I mean, he's not, you know, I heard somebody on the radio say, you know, is he Plaxico Burress? Is he Martavis Bryant? He doesn't have that glide that, that a Martavis Bryant does. Probably a lot, you know, and Plaxico was so lean, you know, especially early on, maybe a kind of 4 or 5 years into his career, Plaxico Burress kind of movement to his game and all like that. But once again, he's not a burner, but he can get up over top. He can stress the middle of the field, seems right down the middle of the field. Seems like he can take a hit okay, and he can make yardage after the catch. And that, you know, this team needs guys that can get some yak moving forward here, because that obviously was missing from this offense last year. I think he's going to have some special teams ability to him. Now, I haven't looked into that. I only looked into his targets, but I think it would behoove him to be able to play, to contribute some on special teams moving forward. Does he deserve this shot back in the NFL? Absolutely. I think the XFL tape will tell you that for sure. And now what he does with it, we'll see.
I was looking at our 2019 draft profile when he came out of Iowa State. It's so, you know, fortunate to have those things you can go back to. And we did note in that report his hands were an issue, had some focus drop. So seems like something that hasn't really been corrected, and probably something he'll always deal with and frustrate throughout his you know, professional football career. Let me ask you two quick questions about Butler when you went through all the 73 targets. A, was there anything new you learned about his game that surprised you in either a positive or negative way? Was it something that caught you by surprise? Something you didn't expect based on what you knew kind of loosely about him prior to going through all that tape?
Just his ability to get up the field, I think, deeper down the field.
Okay. And then second question, and you kind of touched on this already, but you
I'll tell you one thing that jumped out was a lot of those shorter passes. And that severely impacted his average yards per catch number. And obviously average yards per target number. I was expecting more of a 9 and, you know, an average depth of target of about 9, I think, on the little bit of XFL tape that I'd seen. I was expecting both those averages to be a little bit further down the field than they actually were. And then I was surprised to see how many times they used him. Got the football in his hands so close to the line of scrimmage.
I think that goes into my second question of a lot of, he got most of the reps in the slot from the targets you saw, like where I know you've touched on this a little bit, but outside, inside kind of gauged me on how much he was playing of each.
Yeah, he moved around overall, and I didn't, you know, in an effort to get through this a lot more quicker, I didn't so much chart slot versus, you know, or 1, 2, or 3, you know, those mm-hmm. kind of things there. But he did move. I will say this: he was obviously a lot more closer, you know, to the tackles than not.
Okay. And that's notable because the dude's 6'5" and a half. And so most of those guys are outside type of guys, but he's a guy that has played in the slot and can play in the slot and probably will do that to some degree in Pittsburgh. And that may be one reason why that number was down a little bit in terms of his A-dot and that kind of stuff. But that makes him kind of unique and certainly could be a matchup problem inside and as a blocker as well. For the next level.
Here's what I wrote in here. In fact, 15 of his 51 catches this past season came 2 yards from the line of scrimmage or closer. 7 of those were caught behind the line of scrimmage. Let's see here. 73 of his targets, 48 came between the numbers, with 8 of those coming between the hash marks in the middle of the field. 25 others came outside the numbers. 11 of Butler's 73 targets came more than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage, and 7 of those went for touchdowns. 3 of his receptions came on air yards of more than 20 yards. He registered 10 explosive play receptions, so 10 of 50, whatever it was, were explosive plays of 20 yards or longer, with his longest one being 66 yards. They used him, obviously, a little bit in the red zone. I think he got about 4 of his touchdowns inside the red zone. He was obviously that they like to kind of either work him towards the middle of the field in that short area or run those kind of corners or fades to him.
In terms of the real short receptions, 2 yards or closer, is that RPO game? Is that screen game? Where are those things kind of coming from?
On those shorter ones?
Yeah, you said he had how many yards or shorter?
Like yeah, 7? It was a mix. You know, wide receiver screens, kind of the RPOs and the quick kind of flare outs where, you know, he releases on a short out pattern with it still being right at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it's interesting for a guy that body type who ran 4.48. It's a different route tree than you would expect, but I kind of like that. It is something different, something that kind of separates him, so... You know, can he carve out special teams value? He probably won't work in the return game. You'll have to work on, you know, coverage units and some blocking units in front of the return guys. So I think it's going to be tough for him to do, especially with Boykin there. But the more you can do, the better. And we'll see how he looks in camp.
Right.
All right. Good deal there. I think the last thing to note here, just kind of thankfully a lighthearted story, but TJ Watt posting on Twitter on Thursday of a home accident, you can say, him slipping and falling into his pool. So he's okay, he says. So that's all good there. But JJ roasting him a little bit. And obviously that's some precious cargo. You want to make sure stays okay, stays healthy. He's had enough injuries the last 2 years. You don't want to add any offseason ones to that list.
Yeah, boy. No, you don't. plain and simple. No, you don't. And he's having some fun with it. I know his brother's giving it to him pretty good, but you know, thank goodness he wasn't hurt. And I bet there's like 50,000 people in Pittsburgh now willing to clean his pool for free.
Yeah, for sure. What is that thing he was standing on? He has so much money. I don't even know what to call some of these things. It's the walkway. It's not stairs in his pool, but it's in the pool. What is that? Just a ledge, a lip?
Like a lip or whatnot, I guess. Kind of a shallow, wet, dried lip, I guess. I don't know what you'd call that thing. Some
fancy living there for teaching. What's the thing in the corner? There's this little roped off. Is that like a jacuzzi or is that just the way the pool is shaped?
Who knows?
Yeah, it's some we were an above ground pool kind of family growing up.
We were too.
All right, Dave. Anything else you want to get to today?
No, I think that's got most of it there.
All right, and that's plenty to talk about for a Friday in May. So let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right, let's do it here. Let me cycle through them here.
And again, just upcoming on the Steelers schedule. Tuesday, first day of OTAs, where the whole team, it's voluntary, but you expect basically everybody to be there. I would also expect Alex Highsmith to be there, so that will kick things off Tuesday. And Monday, Kenny Pickett will be on the Football In podcast with Big Ben. And so that's already been recorded, but it will go live on Monday evening.
All right, Brett Nile, a couple of questions about Zach Gentry. There's been a lot of talk about cutting him lately. I have a couple of questions about that. Now, in my opinion, you cut him, someone else will claim him since he's on the 4-year benefit contract with a reduced salary cap hit. My question is, if a team claims him, obviously they have to take his salary, but which number would they have to count towards the cap? Only if the Steelers could sign him to that contract, but if they cut him, does the claiming team get that benefit? I don't know that answer to that question, because obviously I don't think we've seen that happen before overall. So the benefit comes from the league. So I would imagine that the league still pays the benefit there. Right. And I would think whatever the rest of the base salary is and all like that. And obviously if there's any kind of signing bonus in there, the Steelers, the $152,500, the Steelers would have to, eat that. So, I'm not sure overall how that would work if you cut him, with that being a benefit contract.
I don't know either, because this is a relatively new type of contract, right? In terms of this, was this like from the 2020 CBA that got created?
I think it might be. I can't remember. It seems like it was part of the new CBA. Yes.
Okay. But my guess is because when you claim a player, you get his contract. So I imagine the contract would stay the same. It would just be a quirk in the system of that benefit that usually is only for the team that is re-signing a guy that goes to the claiming team. But I imagine it would probably stay as is.
I would imagine it would too. I mean, I wouldn't, you're not going to take pay away from a guy.
Right. You know? So I don't think it would change. Real quick. Good question for multiple reasons, but also got me thinking. The Steelers Twitter account Thursday tweeted a photo of the tight ends flexing, which is, fine social media fodder. We had Darnell Washington. We had Pat Freiermuth. We had Zach Gentry, even had Rodney Williams, a futures contract tight end, who was not in that photo, Connor Hayward. And so is that a sign that Connor Hayward's going to be with Eddie Faulkner and the running backs to be a fullback this year?
It'll be interesting. It's something to watch. And it's, I think that's a noticeable development. We'll obviously, maybe we'll find out more when this team gets to OTAs and gets going there for sure. But all right, number two from Brett, you've talked about how 12 personnel is likely to be a bigger part to the offense this year, and he agrees. However, you're going to install a larger 12 personnel package, and your two top tight ends both have injury concerns, Freiermuth with concussions, and Washington due to injury concerns. Don't you need a third tight end to be able to keep that package available in case of injury? Sure. Look, I mean, if you and that kind of plays into us just talking about Connor Hayward. I mean, if the plan is for to carry a fullback, a more true fullback, or a fullback / H-back, whatever, and Connor is that guy. Because look, even with the tight end slash next to him, he's not going to be a guy that you want to run out there you know, on the end of the line of scrimmage as a as one or two tight ends and 12 personnel there. So would it behoove this team, I guess, to carry three, you know, kind of guys that could you could put on the end of the line? Sure. I mean, if you can make the roster numbers work, absolutely. The thing about Gentry is what, you know, he's not uncuttable. And that's what I've said all offseason. He's not uncuttable. And his contract dictates that he's not uncuttable. We'll see who else they get in here you know, maybe to push him. Obviously, he has that size. And if you're going to want to play that bully ball with 12, 13 personnel at times on the field, you're going to want that size in there. But I'll say this, Gentry's blocking has got to get better, plain and simple. If you're just throwing big body guys out there just because they're big bodies, they still got to do a job.
Sure, his blocking needs to be more like it was in 2021. I thought it took a step back in 2022, and that was disappointing because he's not going to offer really anything else in the receiving game or special teams to add additional value. But yeah, to answer the question, you know, A, depth can only be so good. There's only so many big, you know, monster looking tight ends around like Washington. You have a guy in Gentry who's not going to offer the receiving game stuff. And obviously, I think we just mentioned his blocking took a step back from 21 to 22. But, you know, you could keep three true tight ends of Freiermuth, Washington, and Gentry. Hayward is your Derek Watt replacement, so to speak. So you have four total of the fullback, H-back, and tight ends. And if a Freiermuth or a Washington went down for whatever reason, you know, Gentry can work in 12 personnel as run heavy personnel. Now you will probably change how much you'll use that. And so, yeah, 12 personnel may increase in usage, but it's not anything where you can't adjust on the fly and play more 11. If somebody gets hurt, they're going to still run a bunch of 11 personnel this season. So it's not going to, you know, it would hurt this team obviously, but it's not going to be a disaster if you had to play a little less 12 personnel.
Okay, you've talked about getting a spot for Potterbaum on the roster as a fullback. You could use him as a fullback, keep two running backs, keep a guy like Master Teague on the practice squad, elevate him if there's an injury. And if you need an emergency in-game injury replacement, simply use Hayward. I mean, Hayward obviously did carry the football some at Michigan State. It will be interesting for the rest of this offseason to see how dedicated he is more to that running back room per se, you know, how much they intend to use him as a fullback. Look, I'm more interested in Potterbaum because I like those guys that seem to come out of the womb as fullbacks, you know, and it looks like he got the t-shirt probably not long after birth. I mean, realistically, what is the chances for Potterbaum to make this roster? Probably not great, but things do happen. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say he's not gonna make it. And, you know, we wrote and talk about Master Teague. I mean, the thing that I just wanted to point out about Master Teague is it does look like, you know, he has at least a fighter's chance, especially if Benny Snell's not brought back and it's not looking like that's going to happen. It looks like he's going to have a fighter's chance to potentially make the roster. So once again, you know, you're talking about what you're doing, Brez. You're talking about different type of roster manipulation here. But as we've seen, we talk about projected rosters in May. It's funny how stuff happens, you know, between that time of year and beginning of September that makes you go, well, that didn't work out the way we thought it would for whatever reason, injuries, you know, surprise releases. I mean, for God's sakes, you know, who would have thought, when was Jannard Avery signed last year, Alex?
Oh man, that's a name I haven't heard in quite some time. He was signed earlier in the offseason, I want to say, or maybe was it around this time? Now you got me curious.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just the first example that came to my head. And what was the kind of the thinking at that time? Well, that guy's going to be, potentially the number three or number four outside sure. linebacker, right?
March 28th of last year, he signed okay. a 1-year deal.
You know, and I mean, I know we don't remember specifics, but you know, but I know before camp started, you I'm sure both of us probably had him penciled in on a 53-man roster, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, every year, you know, as you said, things happen that you don't expect. That's happened literally every single year, and it will happen in 2023. Now, what that thing will be, I don't know. That's what we don't know and don't expect and can't anticipate it occurring. Think about Ray McLeod, who got signed in 2020. No one could see him because it was COVID and everything was shut down in terms of practices. So we're all sitting at home, just, you know, he gets signed and all of a sudden he makes the team. And it's like, okay, apparently because he had a great run back and a full, you know, session kick return touchdown that he had in a full contact drill because they couldn't do preseason stuff. So every single year, Zach Banner comes off mid camp, he makes the team. I mean, you just never know.
Right. And look, you know, maybe Potterbaum comes out there and he's a guy that you just, you know, you decide you can't keep him off the roster for whatever reason. You know, he'll obviously have to contribute on special teams, but I bet that's in his blood too.
Hey, he's a linebacker. I mean, he's done it. I mean, if he makes the team, it'll be the same path as Rosie Nix, who made it not for what he did as a fullback initially, but because of the special teams. He blocks that punt against Carolina after a really good summer overall. That cements a spot. To answer the question about, you know, carrying two true running backs, you're not going to do that because if you lose somebody in the first quarter of a game, you only have one running back left. And so, yeah, you have Teague you could call up, but he's not going to help you in game. And I know Hayward's there, but it's been a couple seasons since he's played running back. He's not going to carry the ball much this year. He carried it a little bit late last year, but you don't want that. You're risking trouble there. So if you want to try to start carving out ways for Potterbaum to make it, I'd have to see what the roster construction was like when Rosie Nix made it all those years ago when they carried two fullbacks to start in Will Johnson and him. It would probably have to be where you go five receivers, three tight ends, two fullbacks, and Hayward and Potterbaum. That's probably the best math for him to try to make this thing.
All right. And look, this what I usually do now once the 90-man roster gets set is I start going through the roster of guys that I'm really, really intrigued about. That I think could potentially make noise during the offseason there. I think Master Teague should be on people's list when it comes to that, potentially being a guy that could go, you know, maybe either way, practice squad or 53-man roster. I mean, I think Potterbaum is definitely, more than anything, just going to be a fun guy to watch and throughout the rest of the offseason, especially if he can stay healthy. Hakeem Butler is now one of those guys. Who else is one of those guys that, man, I'm really intrigued about this guy.
Yeah, I think you hit on, and you're saying like more new players that we haven't had eyes on before.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, look, even the backup center, Ryan McCollum, you know, mm-hmm. that's a guy that even though he's been around, kind of interested to see what he can do. And then obviously you're going to talk about the draft picks and really all of the undrafted free agents there. But I mean, there's just certain guys that you start going through this time of year and thinking, yeah, that's a guy going to be, you know, trying to keep tabs on. Wonder what happens with him.
Right. Because my first thought went to Mark Robinson, a bit more of an obvious mm-hmm. name, but I really want to see his year number two. I think he could still beat out Landon Roberts for that starting job and see significant play time right away. But yeah, I did the math for an article on Thursday. I didn't get the chance to compare this year over year. I know roster turnover occurs each year. And some of this is like guys playing 15 or so snaps and then they're gone. But right. 27 players that played snaps for Pittsburgh last year are no longer on this roster. Another five guys are guys that are potential cuts or may lose a starting role. And Dan Moore, Kevin Dotson, Gentry, Loudermilk, et cetera. So, I mean, we're talking about, you know, again, I mentioned this, I think, on Wednesday's show, something like probably 25 to maybe even, I don't know, 30 different names on this roster from one season to the next. It has been a pretty ridiculous amount of roster turnover.
That kind of plays perfectly into this next email I got from David Ricards here. He says, Dave and Alex, it feels like Omar is really turning over the bottom of the roster. Has this season been above average or am I off base? He says, thanks to the Depot team for coverage. He says, I know Dave doesn't drink anymore, but he should treat the group to drinks at the carnival bar next time they're out for the Shrine Bowl. It's fun for under 30 crowd, assuming it's even still open. Yeah, I'm not even familiar with a carnival bar is, and these guys are usually, you know, busy from the time they, we go out to eat when these guys come to Vegas for the Shrine Bowl, right when they get here. But I mean, they, you know, and then obviously they, after practices and all, they go get a bite to eat or whatnot and all like that. But, I usually have to be tethered to the computer, at the Metroplex, while that's going on there. But as far as, is this season been above average? I guess we'd have to look back, you know, and all like that, but it does feel like the churn is above average for sure this off season.
I would say so. And again, I can't quantify it. And there is some of that prisoner of the moment where you kind of forget about, you know, 2022, there was a big free agency class and a fair amount of change there, but I would probably venture a pretty solid guess that you're seeing a lot of turnover here. And again, that's partly because I know the cons of promotion in-house higher, but you know, it's old new GM and you have Andy Weidel that comes in. And when you do that, you typically have a fair amount of roster turnover. This, you know, roster wasn't the best last year. They were 9-8. You know, at the bye, they were one of the worst teams in football. So, you know, that's to be expected. It's unusual. It's a bit uncomfortable for Steeler fans because they're not used to that kind of change in one of the main key decision makers. But this team's kind of really been refocused in terms of its vision, who they want to be, how they want to win. And so you're seeing a lot of change that comes along with that.
All right, one last one. We'll get out of here. This one's about our own Owen Straley from Rocco. Rocco says, hey, Dave, just wanted to offer a tip of the cap to Owen Straley. His work covering defensive backs is strong, and his byline is probably my most anticipated from your stable of writers. His technical expertise just drips from the page. I think your readers really learn and benefit from his work. Please keep up the good work as always, Rocco. Thanks for that. And I pass that on to Owen as well as to the other guys and all. And you're right. I mean, Owen, look, he played a position in college there. We've leaned on him several times for defensive back stuff, even in season when we're not too sure about a certain coverage or an assignment. And you usually pass that right on to him and he's able to decipher it real quick. And Owen's, I mean, I can't even remember how long Owen's been with me now, but several years. And obviously now he's getting his feet wet in the college coaching ranks. Couldn't be prouder for him of that. And Rocco, you're right. You read his work on, and he asked for Dolphins versus Steelers tape just today. And he just did something on Patrick P. I don't know what he's got up his sleeve here, but look for another defensive back related post from that, because he is very good at what he does.
I think it's something on Levi Wallace. Him and I were talking about brainstorming some ideas, so he's kind of diving through the tape. But yeah, it's always good to have smart people on the site and people that know a ton about a specific position. I think our whole site has been built on kind of the really passion, the focused energy on one particular thing. Of course, the Steelers, and when you bring in guys like Owen that know the particulars of defensive back play so well that can explain it on a whole nother level, really makes you appreciate the position, the nuances that come along with it. We both learn, and I think our readers learn too. So thank you, Rocco, for noticing that, for appreciating Owen, because he does a fantastic job.
Amen. All right, Alex, shall we get out of here?
Yeah, we'll come back on Monday, and who the heck knows what else there'll be to talk about. Odds are there will be something to talk about. We keep talking about we should do two shows a week, but I don't know if we're going to get to that point hardly at all, because it has been just an active cycle.
All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Cazorla. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button, upper right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button, upper right navigational bar. And until Monday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.